Marvabosa, ladies and gentlemen, our guest Magid Shir for this evening, for Priestly Hashir, is someone who needs really very little introduction to most people in our community. Harav Tzvi Sabalovsky is very, very well known as a Magid Shir, Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshiva Zemenet Tilchomin, Yeshiva University, and locally is the Rav of Congregation Or HaTorah here in Bergenfield, and is a much admired and deservedly very highly respected Talmud Chacham and Magid Shir, whose shiurim are available to his Talmidim now with the advent of shiurim online and computers and so on and so forth. Literally, hundreds and hundreds of his shiurim are available on the various different websites, local websites, in our base medrash here, Bergen County base medrash, from YU. And I know very well that Rabbi Sabalovsky has consulted on halachic issues from people literally all over the country. I know this because he's a very dear friend, and we spend quality time every morning together. We travel in from Teaneck to Yeshiva University together in the car every morning. More actually, to put it technically, he drives and I sit in the car. And I know that the phone is always ringing, and the cell phone, and he's always in contact. Yes, he uses the Bluetooth, don't worry. The wire, and really is shilas on all kinds of subjects with different people. As I said, a very, very close personal friend. I'm very grateful for him for taking time out this evening to share a few words of inspiration for us as we prepare really for the, as I mentioned, shul this morning, the more intense period of the Yom HaNoraim, preparing for that time with the recitation of Slichas this evening. Without any further delay, Harav Sabalovsky.
Rav. The truth is, whatever Rabbi Tavis was saying about me is equally true about himself, because we're in the same car and he's also on the phone all the time. So it's we asked most people whether they thought that Rosh Hashanah was a time of tshuva. I think the answer most probably would be yes. Usually associate Rosh Hashanah, of course, the first of Eser Smei Tshuva, as a primary time during the course of the year to be Chozer B'Tshuva. And in fact, it's not just our initial reaction that would lead us to believe this way, but taking a look at the Rambam Menuchas Tshuva, we get the same impression. The Rambam tells us concerning the mitzvah of Tekiah Shofar, so even though the mitzvah of Tekiah Shofar is primarily a chok, it's primarily a gezerah, it's a mitzvah that we don't really comprehend, we cannot truly fathom the ultimate reason for the mitzvah of Tekiah Shofar. Nevertheless, the Rambam tells us that remez yeshbo, there is a meaning behind it, there is a hint, there is an allusion within the mitzvah of Tekiah Shofar. There is a message that we can relate to in this world concerning the mitzvah of Tekiah Shofar. And the Rambam says the message is fairly straightforward, fairly simple. Uri Yishenu Mishnaschem, those who are sleeping, those who are slumbering, should wake up. It's an alarm clock, it's a wake up. Who is sleeping? What's considered to be sleeping for the purposes of Tekiah Shofar? So the Rambam tells us, one of the most beautiful phrases the Rambam uses, those individuals who are shochim es ha-emes b'havlei hazman, those people who forget truth. Why do they forget truth? Because they become so bogged down in havlei hazman. Sometimes the term havlei hazman is hard to define properly. I think a good Yiddish term is narishkeit, refers to havlei hazman. So those individuals who get so bogged down in the foolish, trifle things that take up so much of our time and energy, comes the shofar Rosh Hashanah, wake up. It's a call to wake up. It's a chozer b'tshuva. It's an alarm clock. So the Rambam is telling us, in effect, that tekiah shofar is basically a mitzvah tshuva. It's a vehicle to assist us, to arouse us for the purpose of performing the mitzvah tshuva. So of course Rosh Hashanah is a zman tshuva. So lechor, at first glance, the answer to our question, not only are we correct in terms of our initial reaction, but we have support from the Lashon HaRambam that yes, Rosh Hashanah is very much a Zman Tshuva. However, there's another comment of the Rambam, an entire series of halachas at the beginning of Hilchos Tshuva, which seem to contradict this very basic premise. The Rambam introduces to us the mitzvah of Tshuva and tells us Tshuva, like any other mitzvah in the Torah, has a certain protocol. There are certain ways to do it. There's a maisa mitzvah. The same way we have halachas, how do you go about putting on tefillin? How do you go about shaking a lulav? There are halachas which dictate how to perform the mitzvah of Tshuva properly. And there's a say that Hadvarim, there's an order of things that one does in order to perform tshuva properly. The Rambam delineates this entire order in the beginning of a tshuva. A person has to feel bad, has to be mischarit al sha'avar, and a person has to be mekabel ha'boy, has to accept upon himself in the future that he's going to try his best not to be chote again. And a person has to express remorse and feel shame, mizbayish al ma'aseh v'arayim. And all of these things have to be done, not only belayed, not only in one's heart of hearts, but one has to express them orally and verbally, the mitzvah vidui devarim. And again, we're not going to get into the details right now as to whether the Rambam holds that shuv is the mitzvah, vidui is the mitzvah. The bottom line is the Rambam holds you have to do both. You have to do a combination of tshuva slash vidui, and that is the mitzvah's essay of tshuva slash vidui according to the Rambam. If Rosh Hashanah is in fact the Zman of Tshuva, then we would have expected that all of these themes that the Rambam is emphasizing in Hilchos Tshuva would be expressed in the Tefillos of Rosh Hashanah. We should trust Chazal, that Chazal instituted for us the Nusach HaTefillah. They would have incorporated into the Nusach HaTefillah itself all of these dimensions of Tshuva, which in fact on Yom HaKippurim they very much did. And of course we're familiar with the Viduyim that we recite, which take up such a significant part of the davening on Yom HaKippurim. So it's quite clear in the Tefillos and Yom Kippur, we have all the aspects of the Rambam. We have the Charata and the Kabbalah and the Busha, everything is mentioned, everything is put in to the Nusach HaTefillah of Yom Kippur. Yet in Rosh Hashanah, you can search the Machsa high and low, start from the first Ma'ariv to the last Mincha, you won't find Charat al Shavar, you won't find even Kabbalah Lahaba, you won't find Busha, Chlima, all those Lashonas that we're familiar with from Hilchos Yom Kippurim are clearly missing from the davening on Rosh Hashanah. In fact, the Poskim even have a fascinating discussion concerning the Avinu Malkeinu that we recite in Rosh Hashanah. So we start off Avinu Malkeinu Chatanu Lefanecha. So we have to Yechavarim say, you're not allowed to say that. We have to start with the second Avinu Malkeinu, because you're not even allowed to say Lashon Chet on Rosh Hashanah. And even our minig, most of us have the custom of saying Avinu Malkeinu Chatanu Lefanecha. It's a lumdus and a pilpul and a drasha. It doesn't really mean it. It's not really Lashon Chet, etc. Everything is missing in Rosh Hashanah. The entire protocol of tshuva is clearly missing. So what is Rosh Hashanah? Is Rosh Hashanah zman of tshuva, like the Rambam seems to indicate in terms of tkiya shofar? Or is Rosh Hashanah not really an emphasis of tshuva? Rosh Hashanah is a different theme. Tshuva is put on hold until Yom Kippurim. So I think the answer to this dilemma really requires of us to break down the mitzvah of tshuva into two distinct parts. There's tshuva, what we call tshuva on the protim, and then there's tshuva on the klolim. Perhaps the order will have to be reversed. Tshuva on the Pratim is the tshuva that we're familiar with from Yom Kippurim. That's the tshuva of Al-Chei, Chechatan Lefanecha, the Aleph Beis, and even from the mere fact that the Nusach HaTefillah, we incorporate the Vidui into a phrasing of Aleph Beis. Aleph Beis is always an expression of the fact that we want to cover all bases. We want to get every last detail in. Like the Asher Yosher Meisach, we want to praise the Kodesh Baruch with every single letter of the Aleph Beis. We don't want to miss anything. Okay, we miss a nun here and there. But we want to basically praise the Kodesh Baruch with everything that's in our ability. Aleph Beis is always used when we want to get every last detail. So if we recite, Ashamnu, Bagadnu, Gazalnu, and then Be'ainis, and Be'ratzah, Be'mutzalei, Be'vitis Vasayim, we spell out each and every one of our Chatoim using the Aleph Beis. That means we want to clear ourselves every single prat. And just in case the list of Chazal isn't long enough, so the Chayodim for every Aleph gave you another 15 Alephs. And then the later Poskim added on more. So you can have so many Pratim. That's the Tshuva, that's the Vidya of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a Tshuva on the Pratim. However, there's a very different type of a Tshuva. There's a Tshuva on the Klolim. There's a Tshuva on general headings, on general categories. And perhaps we have to analyze, what exactly does that mean, Tshuva on a Klal? What type of Tshuva, what dimension of Tshuva are we referring to? We take a look at the davening on Rosh Hashanah, and it's quite clear that there are three primary themes of the tefillahs in Rosh Hashanah. Of course, those themes are the three unique brachas of Rosh Hashanah, the bracha of Malchios, the bracha of Zichronos, the bracha of Shofros. These are such an integral part of the davening on Rosh Hashanah that in fact there's an opinion that appears in Rishonim that I guess many of us are probably thankful for that we don't paskin like, but there's one day in Rishonim that maintains Malchus, Zechronos, and Shofros is not just for Musaf. Malchus, Zechronos, and Shofros is for Ma'ariv also, and for Shacharis, and for Mincha. Each of the tefillahs in Rosh Hashanah has to have Malchiyah, Zichronos, and Shofros. You know why? Because Malchiyah, Zichronos, and Shofros are an expression of the Kedushas Hayom. And as we know, each Shmoneh Esrei has to express fully what the theme, what the motif of that day is. So to daven in Rosh Hashanah without saying Malchiyah, Zichronos, and Shofros, that's Ikar Chosam and Asefer. You're missing an integral part of the tefillah. So we happen not to pass like that shita. My 10-year-old son is very happy that we don't postulate that shita, because we're discussing today, you know, the beginning of a new year, you know, he just started fifth grade, so I explained to him, you know, it's time, he's going to be bar mitzvah in a couple of years, we got to start working a little bit more on sitting in shul. Coming to shul is not so hard, he just walks out of his bedroom into my house. It's the same, those who don't know, it's the same building. But to stay in shul, that's already an avodah kasha shebe mikdash, literally. So we're trying to explain to them, you know, the little different incentives. We were discussing different possible plans for how to make it a little bit more inviting for him to shul, some long-term plans that he may have. So we were discussing about up and coming Yom Noroim. So he wants to know, you know, Abba, how many tickets does Rosh Hashanah count? He already is making a cheshbon. Says, you know, it's not fair that for me to come for a regular Shabbos Mincha, I get one ticket, and to come and sit for Muslim Rosh Hashanah is also one ticket. So I said, you're really right. I said, we have to, you know, balance that. We have to figure out some kind of a way to cheshbon out the length of the Shemoneh Esrei. So if I would have told him this sheet and the Rishonim that you have to sit for four Shemoneh Esrei, Zemach, Zechus, and Shofros, it would have cost me, I don't know, whatever the price tag at the end is going to be, it would have been done for Rosh Hashanah alone. So it's a long, long davening Rosh Hashanah. It could have potentially been longer. So technical reasons, we don't say Malchus Zechoros and Shofros in each tefillah. That is true. But the yisod, the Malchus Zechoros and Shofros, makes up the primary text of the tefillah. This clearly everybody agrees to. What is Malchus Zechoros and Shofros? What's it all about? And how does it relate to Rosh Hashanah itself? And why is it such an integral part of the tshuva process? The Rambam tells us in his Perish of Mishnayos, in Perichelek, the very end of Masechet Sanhedrin, it's a very, very famous Rambam. It's become famous because these are the animamins that we have and the yigdal that we sing. That fundamentally, there are 13 different ikari ha'muna. There are 13 basic principles of faith that, according to the Rambam, are non-negotiable. And they basically describe what true, authentic Yahadus is all about. What ultimately defines Judaism, says the Rambam. So there are 13 animamins. With them, we can discuss. Without them, the Rambam says there's nothing to discuss. If we look at the Yud Gimel Animamins of the Rambam, what really defines a life of Torah Mitzvahs in terms of Hashkafa, in terms of philosophy, in terms of outlook on the world, so we could really break it down to three categories. There were three distinct Animamins. We may call them the 13 Animamins, but the truth is there are really only three. The first Animamin discusses HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It focuses on the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Animamin B'muna Shleima, Shema Bari Yisbach Shema. He is the creator. Not only is he the creator, he is in control of the world. And not only is he controlling the world, his essence is a Dover Ruchni, not a Dover Gashmi. And he is only one, Echad Yochad Miyuchad. And again, the first four or five Animamins, which focus primarily on the Rabbanu Shalom. That's the first of the Ikari HaMuna according to the Rambam. The second group of Ikari HaMuna describe Torah, which is in a certain sense the corollary of the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only created the world and left the world to go on its own, what the philosophers would call the watchmaker's theory, the Ribbono Shel Olam cares about the world, and not only does he care about the world, he told us that he cares about the world, and he instructed us how we're supposed to act accordingly because he cares about what we do with ourselves. And this is, of course, the principle of Torah. But before you can get to Torah, the Rambam says, you have to first believe that a Kadosh Baruch Hu could speak to a human being. If you don't accept the concept of Nevuah, of prophecy, then we cannot begin to discuss the existence of Torah. So one of the animamins is the existence of Nevuah. And then there's the concept of Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. And finally we get to the Torah, i.e. Torah min Hashemayim. Then, of course, as a corollary to Torah, is the fact that Zos HaTorah Lo Temuch Lefes, that the Torah is eternal, that the Torah will not change. But basically, this whole group of animamins, this four or five different animamins, all revolve around the Amitos HaTorah, about the truth, the authenticity, the genuine belief that the Torah, Kedosha, is Emes Lamito. So we have two groups of animamins so far. We have the first one, which revolves around HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the essence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Then the second group revolves around the Torah itself. And up comes the third group of animamins. And basically the third group of animamins revolves around Schar V'Onesh, the concept of reward and punishment, the fact that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, not only does he exist, and not only did he tell us what he wants us to do with ourselves, but he cares what we do with ourselves, and he will reward us accordingly, and that there's a concept of a dayan, there's a yesh din, the yesh dayan, that there is a concept of reward and punishment, there are consequences, there are negative consequences for our behavior. This is, makes up the third group of ani ma'amins, and again, divided into a whole series of subcategories of ani ma'amins. One is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what we're doing, because if he wouldn't know what we're doing, he wouldn't know what we're thinking, then there would be no way for him, obviously, to hold us accountable for our mitzvos or for our averos. And the notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to bring about the time, the Achris Hayomim, there's going to be a future in the world, that the world that we perceive today is not quite the whole picture. There's a concept of Yimos HaMashiach, and there's a concept of Tchias HaMesim. And at the end of the day, we'll understand. We may not understand the details right now. At the end of the day, we'll understand what the true Schar V'Onesh is all about. This is, in a sense, the third part of the Ani Ma'amins. So according to the Rambam, we've just broken down authentic Judaism into three categories. There's the belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's the belief in the Torah, and there's the belief of Schar V'Onesh with everything that goes with it, Yimos HaMashiach, Tchias HaMesim, etc. Before we can begin to embark upon tshuva process, before we can begin to get into the details of what we did incorrectly during the course of the year, or perhaps what we haven't done enough during the course of the year, before we can get to the details, we have to make sure we have the foundation. As a phrase, nafal hayesod, nafal habinyan. If the foundation isn't strong, then the building will topple. And the same is true in terms of a spiritual yesod and a spiritual binyan. That we cannot begin to discuss particular nuances of mitzvahs or averos until we have quite clear that our hashkofas achayim, that our world outlook is a genuine Torah approach. And what constitutes a Torah approach? What are the yesodos? What are those pegs that have to be pegged into the ground with absolute firm? Those are the three groups of ani ma'amins of the Rambam. Each and every one of us has to make a din b'cheshbon. Do we really honestly believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Borei Olam? Now that's quite a power-packed statement. It's one thing to believe rationally that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Borei Olam. Do we live with that cognizance that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Borei Olam? You know what they say from the Bali Musa said, sometimes a person says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Lekir, Hashem Echad, and he has in mind, like the Gemara in Brachas, he's being miyached HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the east and the west and the north and the south and the up and the down, Mamish Dal, Ruchos, and Shema and Varetz and everything. And then you tap him on the shoulder and say, by the way, you forgot to accept the HaKadosh Baruch Hu in one small teeny place. Where is that? On yourself, in your own heart. Do you really live that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Melech Ma'achei HaMelachim? That's one thing we have to take in mind. Before we can begin to discuss Al-Chei Tshechatam L'Fanecha, to say Al-Chei Tshechatam L'Fanecha without accepting the Ribbono Shel Olam as the Melech Ma'achei HaMelachim and all that that carries with it, it's going to be literally a Bracha Levatola. That's not enough. It's not enough just to accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Melech Ma'achei HaMelachim. We have to know quite clearly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of us. And we have to reaffirm our commitment, reaffirm our belief in the Torah Kedosha, in the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that it's very nice to speak about HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Melech, but if it doesn't mean anything practically to you, if we don't know what the Ksav HaMalchus is, if we don't know what the document that the king has sent out to us, if we don't believe the Amunah Shleim that we have the words of the Melech Chai V'Kayim in front of us, so then just believing in Malchus Shemayim without Torah is in a sense meaningless. And the third of the basic yesodos is that we have to reaffirm our belief in ourselves that everything really matters, that our actions really do matter, that it's not all a game, that there are consequences, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has expectations for us, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do certain things and wants us to refrain from certain things, and He cares, and there are, we have such a positive consequences, and unfortunately, perhaps there are negative consequences. The whole concept of Schar V'Onesh, this is the third of the yesodos that we have to, we can reaffirm to ourselves before we can even get into the batter's box of discussing mitzvahs and averus. And this is what Chazal perceived of as the avoda, albeit an avoda kosher shel mikdash, the avoda of Rosh Hashanah. This is what a person has to have in mind. This is what a person is supposed to be focusing on during the day of Rosh Hashanah. The Amitas HaDvarim, the truth of these three concepts, and these are the brachas of Malchias, Zichronos, and Shofros. Malchias, Kishmo Kenu, as its name connotes, Kabbalah Samalchus Shemayim. The bracha Malchias doesn't mention us. We're not important in the bracha Malchias. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a Melech, Malchim, Lochim, on the entire world. and yes, the Shema Yisrael and us as well, that's Kabbalah's Malchios. That's what we have in mind. With that Kiyah Shofar blast at the end of the Brach of Malchios, those are the only things should be going through our minds. Kabbalah's Malchios Shemayim, that's what we're accepting upon ourselves. The Rebbeinu Shalom is the Melech Malchiyam Lochim. Zichronos, Eschar Va'onesh. The bulk of the tefillah of Zichronos, the introduction to the bracha of Zichronos. We mentioned that Kadosh Baruch Hu remembers everything, and Zeichah Kol Nishkachos, that He remembers everything. Ein Davar Ela Mimecha Ve'en Nista Minegen Einecha, that Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't forget anything, and there's a din v'cheshbon and everything. And we beg the Rebbeinu Shalom that our Zichronos Tovos should be Allah, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu should remember our merits, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu should accept that tshuva and those things that perhaps we would rather that a Kadosh Baruch Hu forgets, and Shichal of Nech Vaznecha, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't forget, but a Kadosh Baruch Hu will be Makabal HaTshuva, we'll put those things on hold. That's the Baruch of Zichronos. We reaffirm when we recite Zichronos, when the shofar blasts at the end of Zichronos, so we're Makabal upon ourselves that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is the Dayan, not just the Melech Malchim Lochim. He's the Dayan, and there's a din, and there are consequences, and that's the Baruch of Zichronos. And what is the Baruch of Shofros? Where do shofros fit into this picture? The brach of shofros, just take a look at the psukim that Chazal chose. The psukim, the opening psukim of shofros, describe the shofar of Matan Torah. The primary theme of shofros is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when He speaks to the world, He speaks to the world through the kol HaShofar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to the world first and foremost at Mamed Har Sinai, and by revealing Himself to Klal Yisrael, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will again reveal Himself to the entire world on the day of Kibbutz Golios, Meheira, Yivanei HaMikdash, and what will accompany that Gilu Shechinah? V'hoya b'yamahu yitocha b'shoifah gadol. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when He speaks to this world, when He has a message to tell us, so that's the call. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu gathers the world. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu gathers Klal Yisrael. Shofar is a vehicle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to us. The Baruch of Shofros reaffirms our commitment, reaffirms our belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has spoke to us, and we know exactly what He said. And you know what He told us? He told us Tarek Mitzvahs. He told us to observe the Torah Mitzvahs. L'lamed la'amcha Torah Mitzvahs. We cannot say it any clearer. The opening words of Atan Gleis of the Baruch of Shofros, it sounds like a Shavuos morning. And it is. That's exactly right. That the opening Baruch of Shofros emphasizes our commitment to Kabbalah Satorah. So believe it or not, in the Shemoneh Esrei of Rosh Hashanah, we have incorporated the Yigdal. We have the Anin Ma'amins, the three Anin Ma'amins of the Rambam, the Shlosh Hashem Shlosh Asar, the three basic Yesodos, which have 13 and subcategories, are all expressed in our tefillos on Rosh Hashanah. And perhaps this is the tshuva of Rosh Hashanah. The tshuva on Rosh Hashanah is not yet a tshuva on Ma'isim. It's not a tshuva of Al-Chayitz. It's not a tshuva of, Oy Gevalt, I spoke Lashon Hara last week. Oy Gevalt, I didn't learn properly. Oy Gevalt, I didn't daven properly. That's not the name of the game in Rosh Hashanah. There'll be plenty of time, as Eretz Yemei Tshuva, there'll be plenty of time in Yom Kippur to clap Al-Chayitz. The tshuva of Rosh Hashanah is to enable us to be able to clap Al-Chayitz. The tshuva of Rosh Hashanah is to be able to be chayze v'tshuva on our machshava, to be able to be chayze v'tshuva on our priorities, to be able to get our lives back in place. The Uri Yishen Mishnazchem, those people who are sleeping, who forget these things. Of course, if you'd stop anybody and ask them, do you believe in the Rabban Shalom? I'm talking about Hashem Torah Mitzvah. Of course I believe in the Rabban Shalom. And you ask him, are you living your life like you believe in the Rebbeinu Shalom? Is it really Shavis Hashem the Negdi Summit? Is the Rebbeinu Shalom really with you? Is it always Malchus Shemayim? Well, you may get another answer. That's what Malchus is. And Zichronos, do you really believe that the Rebbeinu Shalom is watching? Is it Shavis Hashem the Negdi Summit Mamish? We hope. Not just something up top of the beam. I don't know whether you have that phrase in the beam or not. Not just Dalafnei Miyata Omeid when you get up to down for the Yomid. Is it really Dalafnei Miyata Omeid? Do you realize that you're standing in front of the Rebbeinu Shalom all the time? That's the Bracha Zichronos. That's what there's a Din V'cheshbon. That's the Tshuva Rosh Hashanah. To put yourself back into that mind frame. And Shofros, you believe that L'lam Eliyam Chatera Mitzvahs, you believe that the Torah is Min HaShemayim. So let's not forget that scary mission in Brikei Avos. V'chol Yom Baskel Yotzes Min HaChorev Oylem L'Briyos B'Yom L'Shal Torah. That from HaChorev, from Har Sinai, there's a voice that comes out from heaven every day. Woe unto those who don't learn the Torah, those who don't accept the Torah. If you're really honest, to goodness, believe this is Dvar Hashem, whoa, you would find time to learn at night. You would find time to go to Shia in the daytime. You'd figure out an Eitzah. If you're really honest, to goodness, believe you have the Dvar Hashem in front of you, well, you would have a whole different different approach to Torah mitzvahs. Those are the three points to focus on. When the shofar blasts on Rosh Hashanah, Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Dayan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, Kol Masech HaVaseich V'Nechtovim, and yes, Olam Eliyam HaTorah Mitzvahs, we have that vehicle, we have the Dvar Hashem right in front of our very eyes. So perhaps now we have a little bit of a glimpse into the relationship between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim. It's a different tshuva. Rosh Hashanah, the tshuva on the machshava, on the hashkafa, on the klolim, that enables us to get into the tshuva of Yom Kippur. But I have one simple question. Today is not Yom Kippur, it's not even Rosh Hashanah, we're about to start slichas in a few moments. Where does slichas fit into the picture? According to what I just said, we're nowhere near being chazer b'tshuva. We're not even in the ballpark of chazer b'tshuva. Chazer b'tshuva, that's coming down the line, that's another 3 weeks from now, that's Yom Kippur, that's Vidur, that's Hachetz. Why are we starting now, a week and a half before Rosh Hashanah? We're starting with Achetz. We're starting not Achetz. We're starting with Hashamnu. We're starting with Tefillos of Tzlichos, with Tshuva. We're getting into the Tshuva mode. What are we doing exactly? What is the nature of the Tshuva of the next week and a half? If it's not a Tshuva on the Pratim, for sure not. That's not until after the Malachi Zecharos and Shofar, not before. And it's not even a Tshuva on the Klolim. What is it? So I think the answer is found in an approach that the Rishonim give as to why the minig, at least in the Ashkenazi communities, is to start slichos a certain amount of days before Rosh Hashanah. The reason is given, we know there have to be a minimum of 4 days between the beginning of slichos and Rosh Hashanah. It happens to be that minig cost us a little bit this year. It adds a couple of extra days of slichos, because whenever Rosh Hashanah falls out on a Tuesday, so you don't have enough days, you have to start the week before. But the idea being that a minimum of 4 days, that's for sure. Why is that, my high? Where did the number magic number 4 come from? So the Rishonim explained that it's based on a halacha that appears in Ochos Karbanos, that when a person brings a carbon, again, leaving out the details right now, which Karbanos this applies to, but at least in theory, certain Karbanos have a halacha, what's called Bikur Mimum. We know that one is not permitted to offer a carbon which has a blemish, which has a physical blemish to it. So not only is it not acceptable to offer a carbon with a blemish, you have to actually check for the blemish. You have to take a look and inspect the animal carefully before you offer it as a carbon, just to be absolutely certain that there's really no blemish that you missed. How often do you have to inspect it? How many checks do you have to do? How many bedikas do you have to do? So the Gemara derives from Sukkim, Vayelachem the Mishmeres, 4 days, just as the original Korban Pesach, they took it on the 10th day of Nisan, the Shechet on the 14th day of Nisan, 4 days Labakar Mimumim. So before you bring a carbon, before you come to the Rebbeinu Shalom, before you even walk into the Azara, you have to look at that animal, look at from head to toe, and make sure there's no mum there. And therefore, before we daven in Rosh Hashanah, we have to be Mevakir Mumin. What does Rosh Hashanah have to do with Mevakir Mumin? Why is Rosh Hashanah different than any other time? So the Rishonim point out that whereas all other Karbanos that are described in Parshas Pinchas, the Torah always speaks about V'ikraftem Ola, you bring a Korban, you offer a Korban. Rosh Hashanah is the only day where it says V'asisem Ola, you make for yourselves a Korban. And Rosh Hashanah, a person is a Korban. A person comes to Ribbono Shel Olam, doesn't just bring an animal, but he literally brings himself, he's makir himself a Gabi HaMizbeach, and as such he has to be Mevakir Mimumin. So let's stop and ask ourselves for a moment, what does that mean, Mevakir Mimumin? What do you look for when you're looking for a mum? The truth is, we know that mumim are external, mumim shebegoloi, things that are internal, that's not mumim, that's the chostrefos, and that's not going to be discernible until after you shech the animal. Mumim are things which are begoloi. Mumim are things that, you take a look and see, is there something wrong with the eyes, is there something wrong with the legs, is there something wrong with the hands, something wrong with the lips. Those are mumim shebegoloi, and you have to look and inspect carefully before you offer the carbon. I think that that's the sort of the days of slichas as well. That slichos is not the tshuva of Yom Kippur by any stretch of the imagination. The tshuva of Yom Kippur, the alchetz of Yom Kippur, the same words that we're going to say tonight of Hashamnu is a different Hashamnu. The Hashamnu and the alchetz of Yom Kippur is an internal tshuva. We're not looking for surface movement on Yom Kippur. We're trying to get scratched beneath the surface. We're trying to get to the root cause of the disease. It's not enough just to take a Tylenol on Yom Kippur. We want to get to what is the problem. If there's an infection there, we want to root it out. If there's a spiritual problem, we want to remove it. That's the tshuva of Yom Kippur. That kind of a tshuva, an introspection which gets into our guts, into our heart of hearts, you can't just walk into that tshuva. You have to have Rosh Hashanah to precede it. You have to make sure you have the fundamentals down. You can't honestly make it in the cheshbon of your pnimius without being mekabel the malchus zecharos and shofars. But you know what you can do? You have no right to say malchus zecharos and shofars. You have no right to come to the Rebbe Shalom Rosh Hashanah. We're about to be Omid Ladin. In a week and a half, we're going to stand in front of the Rebbe Shalom. How can you even get into the Azara? What gives you a right to walk into the Heichal? If you're a Baal Mum, you can't even walk in. What you have to do before Rosh Hashanah is to make sure that there's nothing visible on the surface, something that can catch your immediate attention. Make sure you cleared yourself of external movement. Make sure there's nothing blatant, there's nothing glaring that's going to be ma'akev, that's going to prevent you from coming to the Rebbeinu Shalom, to the Melech Malchei Hamelachim. That's the Biker of Dalad Yom of the Imei HaSlichos. It's a different Chalel Shem of Al-Chait. It's a different type of Tshuva Legamrei. It's an external tshuva. It's just to clear off the movement on the outside because you can't get into the Beis HaMikdash with those movement when those movement are present. So we really have, in a sense, three different stages of what we have to accomplish. We got quite a work cut out for us over the next couple of weeks. So the next couple of days, the next week and a half, this year, Baruch Hashem, we have a longer, so we have more time to work on the movement Shabbagoli first. We have to look at ourselves. Not in the heart of hearts yet. We're not ready for that yet. We can't fake ourselves, can't kid ourselves and think we're going to make an inner introspection just like that. You have to first clear the surface. Let's get rid of the surface dirt. You know, like when you sometimes you have to just clean something off before you can even begin to get to the amkos, to the depth. So let's look for some of those surface problems. Some of the things that we can immediately identify, and let's get rid of them. Let's heal them. Let's cure some of those external afflictions that we have. Before we can get to the Melech Machay Amlochim, before we can even talk to the Rebbeinu Shalom and Rosh Hashanah. When we come to the Rebbeinu Shalom and Rosh Hashanah, we want to at least be externally clean. And now we come to the Rebbeinu Shalom and we're makabel upon ourselves in Malchiyos, Zichronos, and Shofaros, not just as lip service, but the Kol HaShofar penetrates into our very being. And we're makabel in our lave, in our heart of hearts, the Malchiyos, Zichronos, and Shofaros. And now we're ready to go. Now we're ready for business. Now we're ready to klap al chayt. Now we're ready to be mekabel tshuva on the pratim after we have been mekabel tshuva on the klalim, after we have already scratched the surface, after we've already been mekabel tshuva on the chitzonias. So perhaps if this marshal is correct, that the tshuva of the next couple of days is a tshuva of bikur mimumim, what are some examples of mumim that we should be looking for? What are some of the things that really should be catching our attention at this particular time? What type of mumim are those types of mumim that we have to be sensitive to during this time? So there is a very famous Gemara in Maseches Gittin. Many of you learning Daf Yomi learned this not all that long ago. And those who are not following Daf Yomi, many of you learned it on Tisha B'Av. It's a sugya in the Kamtzah of our Kamtzah sugya. Famous sugya, famous story, where the Gemara tells us about the individual who made a party at a time of the Bayesheni, and he had a friend, and he had an enemy, a Kamtzah, a Bar Kamtzah, and then the servant mixed up the invitation. The bottom line, the person ends up at the party who was uninvited, who was an enemy of the host, and the host throws him out. The person begs and he says, no, please don't throw me out. You're embarrassing me. Let me pay for part of the party, the whole party, all back and forth in Gemara. Finally, Lamaisa, the host, throws him out. Terrible thing. And what happens? The story doesn't end there. This individual goes ahead to the Roman authorities and he snitches on Klal Yisrael, snitches on the Jewish people, and he comes up, devises this entire plan that he's really going to take his revenge against everybody who was present. Goes to the Roman authorities and he says, you know, I got a great idea. Why don't you offer a sacrifice? Send an animal as a sacrifice to the Jewish temple. You'll see what the Jews really think of you. You'll see that they won't even accept the sacrifice of yours. So, okay, the Romans said, not a bad idea. They send, pick a beautiful lamb, beautiful animal, and they send it to the Beis HaMikdash. This individual is the Shaliach. He's the one who brings, he's the agent. He brings the lamb to the Beis HaMikdash. But before he brings the animal to the Beis HaMikdash, he does a little small incision on the animal. And the Gemara quotes two opinions what he does. One opinion is he makes a tiny, tiny mum in the eye. You would almost miss it if you didn't look carefully, but if you look carefully, you'll notice he makes a small mum, small blemish in the eye. The Odia Shlomo, the Gemara says, another opinion, it wasn't in the eye, it was on the lip. He makes a small incision on the lip and sends it to the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohanim realize it right away. There's a whole discussion, should they offer it, should they not offer it? Lamais at the end, they don't offer it. The Romans find out, and we're still suffering in Golos. The Churban Beis HaMikdash is brought about through that particular event. Very strange story. The Chazal saw in this event such ramifications, such repercussions. L'chora, Chazal seemed to be picking up on very, very technical details in terms of the story. There was a machlokas in the Gemara, what the mum was. One day it says the mum was in the eye. One day it says the mum was in the lip. I mean, between you and me, Nebuch, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. We're suffering 2,000 years in Golos, and Afkamina Ladina. Who cares what the Sugi Masechus Becheiris, whether it was a mum in the lip, a mum in the eye. I mean, at the end of the day, it was a Baal Mum. At the end of the day, they didn't offer it. At the end of the day, Klai Yisrael were punished. Does it really matter? Yesh Omum that it was in the eye, and Yesh Omum was in the lip. What's the significance of this Gemara? So I think what Chazal are telling us is such a fundamental yisod. The Chazal are telling us that this animal, which had a mum, this animal was a reflection of Klal Yisrael. It was a reflection of Klal Yisrael, particularly at the time of Churban Bayis Sheni, and it was the ultimate description, it was the ultimate symbol of the entire Kamtza Bar Kamtza story. When Chazal say that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Kamtza Ubar Kamtza, so what does that mean exactly? We know when Chazal say that Kamtza Ubar Kamtza, it was Dafka, that event of Kamtza Ubar Kamtza that brought down the Beis HaMikdash. I always give the following mashal. When I was in ninth grade, so I had to write a term paper about World War I. That was my assignment. I wanted a different topic in modern European history. I had to write about World War I. So I wrote the entire paper. It had to be about the causes of World War I. So I remember I wrote a whole paper about nationalism and the arms races and alliances and all the different nuances as to what was the background, all the major conflicts in Europe that were raging for 10, 20 years as the background of the causes of World War I. And then I remember I had a following question. I had to decide, should I put into this paper the story about the Archduke, about the in Serbia, because I don't remember all the details, it's been a long time since ninth grade, but should I put in about the Austria and Serbia and what was the catalyst for World War I? The shot, in a sense, that was heard around the world, the shot, not Bobby Thompson, the shot that literally brought World War I into being, and I remember I deliberately left it out. Why did I leave it out? So I remember thinking at the time, I don't know, I was mechaven to the Gemara Gittin, but I was thinking at the time that the purpose of this paper is not to discuss what was the ultimate catalyst of World War I. What ultimately was the shot? Anyone who studies history will realize if it wouldn't have been that shot, it would have been another shot. It would have been another crisis. The particular assassination of the Archduke in Serbia, that wasn't what caused World War I. What caused World War I were the issues and the conflicts and the crisis that were brewing and brewing for years already, for decades already in Europe. Those were the causes of World War I. The shooting was the Maccabi Patish. The shooting was just the catalyst that brought about this entire reaction that was already brewing for years. Chazal, when they tell us that Kamtza Bar Kamtza was the source of the Churban, Chazal never meant to say that this was the long-term source. Chazal never meant to say everything was just perfect, everything was hunky-dory in Bayis Sheni until Kamtza Bar Kamtza happened, and all of a sudden the terrible event of Kamtza Bar Kamtza brought about Churban. We're not suffering 2,000 years because there was one guy, his name was Kamtza, one guy's name was Bar Kamtza. What Chazal are telling us is that there were issues that were brewing, there was a crisis that were brewing, there were issues in Klal Yisrael that were problematic, and Kamtza Bar Kamtza was a symptom of a much deeper problem. And what was the deeper problem? What was Kamtza Bar Kamtza symptomatic of? It was symptomatic of the real cause. If you had to write a term paper on what was the cause of the fall of the Seven Beis HaMikdash, because I'll say two words, Sinas Chinam. Baseless hatred, one against another, fighting, infighting within Klal Yisrael, that was what brought about the Churban Beis HaMikdash. It could have been a Kamtza Bar Kamtza event that triggered, that lit the fuse, and if it wouldn't have been Kamtza Bar Kamtza, it would have been another event. It would have been another Sinas Chinam. But the yisod of Kamtza Bar Kamtza wasn't in and of itself the cause, it was indicative of a much deeper, of a much greater cause of Sinas Chinam. Chazal tell us that this animal that was brought by this individual, Bar Kamtza, was the ultimate symbol of what was really going on in the days of Bayis Sheni. What was going on in the days of Bayis Sheni, the Klal Yisrael had become Bali Mumin. And in what respect did they become Bali Mumin? They became Bali Mumin in two organs. They became Bali Mumin in their eyes. The Yesh Oimrim, they became Bali Mumin in their mouths. What does that mean? In their eyes and in their mouths? When you look at somebody with an Ayin Hara, Ayin Hara in the sense of red strings. You look at somebody with an Ayin Hara, you look at somebody with jealousy, you look at somebody with what they have and I don't have, and I'm always looking at negatives, and everything I see is, can I find fault, can I find ra, can I find chait in somebody else? That's a mum. in a person's eye. And what happens when a person has such a mum? It doesn't end with the eye. Because what a person sees ultimately dictates how the person speaks. If I see fault in every person, then I will express fault in every person. If I look with an evil eye, if I look with jealousy, I will speak with jealousy. The sinas chinam had two components to it. Sinas chinam started out with an ayin hara, started out with a mum sheba ayin, and it culminated with a mum sheba peh, mum sheba sfasayim. The Chazal tell us this was all illustrated by this one animal. The animal that Bar-Kamtza brought from the Romans to Klal Yisrael should have been the wake-up call to Klal Yisrael. They should have said, Gevalt, there's an animal in front of us with a mum in its eye and a mum in its lips, and we can't bring such a mum al-Gabi Mizbeach. Such an animal cannot be brought to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And nobody saw the writing on the wall. Nobody realized that was the message. The message was not, should we be makriv the bamum, not makriv the bamum. The message was, it's time to wake up, it's time to be chayzi b'tshuv, it's time to correct that mum, it's time to correct the mum sheba'ayin and the mum shebesfasayim. Those are the mumin shebegoloi. It may take a little bit of extra work to find them, but they're begoloi, they're there. They're on the surface, you just have to find them and look for them and correct them. It would appear that perhaps it's these mumim that are most critical for us at this time of the year. The most important avodah over the next week and a half is to be misakin the mum sheba'ayin and the mum sheba'peh, namely the finding fault in others, the blaming others, the always looking for something to criticize, and in as such, natural consequence, if you look for criticism, then you will find it and you will express it. This is the avodah. And why is this avodah? Why is this peak of movement so critical, particularly at this time of the year? Because we're about to enter into a period when HaKadosh Baruch is going to start looking at us also. And HaKadosh Baruch is going to start looking, and how HaKadosh Baruch looks at us is a reflection of how we look at others. Midash on the Mdan, Kach Donim also. If we look with an eye and heart on everybody else, Allah convey how HaKadosh Baruch is going to look at us in the Yom HaDin. But if we look with an eye in Tova, and we always look the other way, and somebody wrongs us, so we say, okay, no, they wronged us, but Michael, okay, but Dan Lechav Schos, we'll look the other way, we'll make shalom, and even if we can't bring ourselves totally make shalom, we won't spread the machlokas, we won't talk to others about it, we won't be mefarsim it, we won't put it on emails, we won't put it on blogs, we're not going to mefarsim the whole world, the movement should be well, at least we'll keep our mouths quiet. If we could work on those two mumin during the next week and a half, then we stand a phenomenal chance of being successful b'din. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu will open up the Sefer Zichreinos and say, okay, well, he did a chait, but you know what? We'll don him l'chav schos, and we'll look for perhaps an excuse for him, and we'll accept his tshuva. Kadosh Baruch Hu will look at us in a very, very different light, depending on how we look at other people. That's the avoda of the Yemei Slichos, the Bikur B'Mumin. So we really have a work cut out for us over the next three tkufas of this Yemei HaDin. We have the first week and a half to work on Bikur Mumin, to be able to enable us to present ourselves to the Ribbono Shel Olam as a korban kosher, number one. Number two, primarily in the realm of Benam L'Chaveiro, to be able to perfect ourselves in these types of Mumin. Once we get our act together over the next week and a half, then we can enter the Yom HaDin of Rosh Hashanah. We can be makabel upon ourselves, the Malchiyah, the Zichrenes, and the Shofaras, get our priorities in order, hear the Kol Shofar and Chibsum Maseichem, and get ourselves ready to roll. And after we've been makabel upon ourselves, the Malchiyah, Zichrenes, and Shofaras, then we can get to the nitty gritty. Then we can do a tshuva that goes way beneath the surface. We can get into the hearts, the deeper recesses of our hearts and souls. And then we can clap al-chay, then it will be genuine. Then the Asham Bagana won't just be a quick way out, but the Asham Bagana will be something that's meaningful, something that gets to the heart of hearts. This is the Seyed HaDvarim. Hopefully, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us a Siyata Dishmaya to be able to be chosen b'tshuva properly, beginning with this period, moving into Rosh Hashanah, Mi'at Hashem, culminating with Yom HaKippur.